This is an ENN special report. Now reporting.
Former 24/7 champion, Peter Rosenberg.
ENN's at 6.
When the clock struck 6, it meant one thing.
Bear, I'm doing a show. Turkey, ducky, turkey, ducky.
That's great.
Now, from the ESPN New York news desk, here's
Rosenbaum or whatever that guy's name is.
No wonder your show is number one.
Oh, yeah, baby. Feels good to be back in this seat. Ty Butler filling in for the great Peter Rosenberg. ENN brought to you by Slomans. Make sure you hit Ty D. Butler, that follow button, on Instagram and Twitter. We start the way Peter normally would. Instead of saying good evening to Michael, Don, and Peter, we first say good evening to one Pat O'Keefe.
In, you know, honor of Memorial Day, actually doing the show in my bathing suit.
Well, that's pretty interesting, if that's true.
How's that working out, by the way, 3 hours in? How's the feeling?
Hour three is a little rougher than hours one and two were.
I told you 3 hours ago that was probably going to happen, but you're a dangerous fellow.
And since my mom taught me manners, we also say good evening to one Dan Grasso.
Anthony, we're going to have to do the hourly check-in on Pat in the wet bathing suit.
Which we just did. Pat in the wet bathing suit.
It could be better.
See that? Like a prophet.
So if you had Tony Danza and, you know, Pat in a bathing suit doing the show on your bingo card, you're doing pretty well today. We don't normally do this, but I want to say good evening to a caller who goes by the name of Matt.
Hello.
Hey, Matt.
Yes, I want to say about the Rangers. Whatever happens, it's a very good season.
Poor Matt, because as we say good evening to Dan, we learned that phone call wasn't too good.
Imagine being on hold from Israel, Pat, and then like coming on the line, and that's the statement you make.
Oh, man. What a blast this has been so far today. You
guys
are awesome.
I'm looking out for Matt, man. That was a lot. You know how many quarters he pumped into that payphone to stay on hold from Israel? That's not just, you know, 75 cents. I'm sure it costs a little bit more than that.
I've thoroughly enjoyed this dynamic duo that you guys put together, put forth today. I don't know if you noticed this, guys, but we've got a big Game 7 happening tonight on these airwaves. Rangers in Carolina taking on the Hurricanes. Came across this. The Rangers actually in their last 8 game sevens, 7-1. So how about that? I know it's on the road against a team that's undefeated on its home ice, but they've got a really good shot. We heard Mark Messier on the program earlier. He's given them a good shot to come out and win this game. So let's hear from Gerard Gallant, who was asked, is your team embracing an underdog mentality?
I don't think personally myself, I didn't look at us being an underdogs in the Pittsburgh series or this series. It doesn't. I mean, they finished in first place. We weren't that far behind in second place. I think it was two good teams. I think a lot of professional people look at it and say Carolina might have the edge there. A lot of people said that. But me as a coach and our players, we don't believe that. We just believe that if we play our best game, we'll win.
Guys, if you told Ranger fans before this season that all they had to do was win one game in Carolina and they'd be playing in their first Eastern Conference Finals in 7 years, you would absolutely take it.
No, absolutely doubt. Take it.
No doubt.
How do we feel about Gerard Gallant? I love the guy's approach. I mean, I don't think there's an ounce of nuance in his body, and it's very refreshing.
The Turk.
Tells you what is on his mind, nothing more and nothing less.
Well, you know what it is? What you admire about him is that he shows his true colors. You know what I mean? He shows you the cards he's got, because I think a lot of both players, coaches, whatever, when they come to this city, Pat, they feel like they can't be their true selves and they're buttoned up. You know what I'm saying? And they're very playing it by the book and this, that. He shows you his personality, and he's been that way since day one. And the fact that his team is winning, I think, benefits it even more. But I admire him for being as authentic as he's been, and I think that so does the fan base.
Yeah,
I appreciate him.
He brings it right. So you know who else brings it? Mark Messier. I mentioned he was on the program earlier. We asked him, and by we, I mean Dan and Pat asked, if this season would still be considered a success if the Rangers don't get it done tonight.
Well, no question about it. I don't think anybody saw him challenging for the divisional win. I don't think anybody expected them to be one of the elite teams of the league during the regular season. And so I think they've taken huge steps as a team. I think the young players, Kako, Lafreniere, Fox, all the young guys on the team that are going to be the leaders of this team in a not too distant future, have gained an incredible amount of experience playing this type of hockey at this time of year. Because, you know, we've all seen the regular season is one thing, but the playoffs are another. And of course, when you get to the Stanley Cup Finals, it's another another level as well. But I think the Rangers are going to be happy with the season, win or lose. But I can tell you, my first year in with the Oilers, 1979, we lost three straight against Philadelphia Flyers, and we were disappointed, and we didn't even know what we're doing at that point. So anytime you lose, you're going to be disappointed. But upon reflection, I think that there's something really, you know, tangible to hang on to as a Ranger organization. And it looks to me, if things stay in place and barring any crazy injuries to some of the great young players, the Stanley Cup looks like it's in the future.
Ty, there's something pretty interesting about that clip, by the way.
Oh, tell it to me.
Well, ESPN did their 2021-2022 NHL season picks at the beginning of the year because we have it again and we had all our analysts. There was one person out of the 22-person panel that picked the Rangers to win the Metro. You know who that was?
Who was that?
Mark Messier.
Wow.
So nobody picked him, but he was being modest. He did pick them. So maybe Mark saw something that we all didn't see.
There you go, Mark.
A little bit. And I'll tell you this. I think that the shoe is kind of on the other foot. Rangers, whatever happens tonight, successful season. You can't say the same about Carolina. Like, if Carolina loses tonight, especially a Game 7 on their home ice where they haven't lost all postseason, this season's a failure. Carolina is already, you know, they're further along the curve than the Rangers are. Like, they were building towards competing for a championship. For them to lose in the second round, losing a Game 7 on their home ice, this would be a failure, in my opinion, for Carolina.
Think about where they were 2 years ago in
right.
the play-in tournament for the bubble when these two teams faced off against each other. It didn't even look like they belonged on the same ice. Carolina had their way with the Rangers in three straight games. They've continued to build from there. The Rangers kind of bottomed out last year, and now they're in the exact same place. 60 minutes, maybe more to go.
Now, I will say this, and I would agree that the season, regardless of what transpires tonight, has to be deemed a success when you look at what the expectations were coming in. I vehemently disagree with this idea that tonight is house money for the Rangers, though. I feel like it's just so hard to win a championship. It's so hard to get back here. I felt the same way about the Yankees in 2017. Like, a lot of people were like, you know, it's house money. Even though you lose that series to the Astros, you'll get back. Well, they haven't been back there. And I'm not saying that, you know, it's apples to apples, obviously, cross-sport reference. But I just feel like, you know, with this Ranger team, yes, the window is open and you can be excited about the future because of the youth of their core. But here's a chance. They have a realistic shot of winning this series. Obviously, it's in Game 7, and then who knows what can happen against the Lightning. But you're so close, man. To be on the cusp of being in the Final Four, I don't think tonight is house money. I feel like you got a real shot to strike when the iron's hot.
Unbelievable.
adjusted expectations, right?
Yes, I recalibrate them as you progress.
Like, beginning of the series, so what, 6 games ago, I still think maybe there was a little bit of house money to it. You could say house money at the beginning of the series, but the fact that you've gotten yourself to a Game 7 where it's 60 minutes for a trip to the conference finals, you're right. House money goes out the window. Like your Yankees example from 2017. 2017, that was a young team. Beginning of the year, I didn't think that was a World Series caliber team. But when you made it to a Game 7, 9 innings away from a World Series, you're damn right. House money goes out the window. Win the game to go to the Fall Classic. Same example.
By the way, Ty, I really do appreciate a few things more than a cross-sport comparison. So well done by you.
There we go.
Look at the names, though. We went through the names. The Rangers are an up-and-coming team. I mean, half of them are, but half of them are not. These are big stars in the NHL. So if they get through tonight, they've got a chance to do some real damage. I mean, if they get through tonight, it's already been a special run. But you go on to the Eastern Conference Finals, it's got a chance to get real fun here the next 2 to 4 weeks.
Absolutely. When you're in the conference final, you have a legitimate shot of winning the championship. And, I mean, the Rangers went, what, 54 years between Cups 3 and 4 and now having won since 94. So to be where you are now, I just wouldn't call it house money. All the pressure, or most of the pressure is on Carolina. They were expected to to win this series. They're expected to win this game. But, I mean, if you're a Ranger fan, I don't think you can go into it with this idea of house money. But we'll see what happens. So, for one game seven to another, last night we saw the Celtics emerge victorious over the Heat. They won that game 100-96, and now they advance to the finals to play the Golden State Warriors. Let's hear from Al Horford. He held the record for most postseason games played without playing in the NBA Finals, so now that record is now off the table because he's going to be going to the finals game one on Thursday. So let's hear from him in terms of his emotions following that feat.
I mean, just don't know how to act. I'm out there just, you know what I'm saying, just caught up, excited. You know, a lot of hard work. I've been a part of a lot of great teams, a lot of great teammates, and I'm so proud of this group. You know, these guys, you know, I seen JB come in the league, take steps, take levels. I seen JT the same thing. I seen Smart grow. And for me, it's just special to be with them and being able to help them and be a part of this. So I'm really grateful to be in this position.
I think most people would argue, like, if you were just an objective observer, so like not a Lakers fan rooting against the Celtics or not a Knicks fan rooting against the Celtics, this was the best case scenario because the conference finals, I know it went seven games, but it was not a great seven game series. The Warriors series ended in five. Yeah, you had the heroics of Luka Doncic, but I think we saw that star power was desperately missed during these playoffs with KD being out in round one, with no LeBron in the entire playoffs, Giannis being done in round two. So Celtics-Warriors, I think, gives us the most favorable matchup. Where do you guys side on that?
I agree, 1,000%. And I was one of those guys that, when was game six? Was that Friday night?
Friday night.
Friday night. Everybody was like, oh, gaga over Jimmy Butler and the performance he had to, you know, lead the Heat into Boston and to steal that victory. I was on the other end saying, I couldn't believe Miami won. I didn't want them to win because that means I have to sit through another game of this series. It was an awful series just in terms of basketball. I mean, either games were blowout, non-competitive. It wasn't a great brand of basketball. Last night was a little bit better for game seven, but the fact that I had to worry about this series for another 2 days, I didn't love that too much. But to Ty's point, Pat, this Boston, Golden State, you've got storylines there for both. Celtics, a national brand, they're the Celtics, the history. Golden State with the Hall of Famers, those guys. Best case scenario, I think, for the NBA, ESPN, all parties involved.
That part, absolutely. And just in terms of competitive games, which is what we want as fans who are going to watch this, this gives you a much more competitive series. Miami was running on fumes at the end. It would have, you know, it would have been an unbelievable collapse by Boston if the Heat ended up winning that game. I mean, think about it. They were down by 13 with 3 minutes left. Jimmy Butler has an open three-pointer in the air with 17 seconds left that would have given the Heat the lead. Obviously, it clanged off the front of the rim. Boston wins, but I don't think Miami, with their injury situation, you know, Tyler Hero is out, Kyle Lowry's a shell of himself, Jimmy Butler, there's no way he can continue to pump out 35 to 40 point games. He's doing everything for that team. So the fact that it's Boston against Golden State, I think, is going to give us a much more competitive series. I think it's going to be a pretty competitive series.
Guys, by the way, Tyler Hero, the groin looked pretty good when he was out clubbing last night after the game. He wasn't taking that loss too bad because, you know, the social media all over the clubs and the different joints he was at, you know, drowning his sorrows in the South Beach fun after his team lost to the Celtics last night.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
By the way, I'm going to ask, I'll ask Ty first, since he was the one that presented us with that little factoid about Al Horford. Do you know who is now the player who has played the most games, most playoff games, without a trip to the finals?
Oh, this is a fantastic
without
question.
Looking it up.
No, I'm
don't
not
going to
look it. I'm not going to cheat.
Because I didn't know.
The most games without playing in an NBA finals?
Playoff games.
Playoff games. I have no idea.
This was sent to me via text by the great Brendan Brown, Knicks radio analyst here on 98.7 ESPN during the season. Pat, do you have a guess?
Well, first of all, Brendan Brown, you're killing me. You text me 30 times a day and you don't give me this answer.
No, he gave me this before.
I thought he was listening right now.
Who's
like Brendan,
guy who consistently got bounced.
You know what? Top of my head, I'm going to say a guy we spoke about last hour, Derrick Rose.
I'll give you a clue if this helps. It's a guy who the majority of those playoff games were played in the Western Conference. Off the top of my head.
Which is this a current player?
Yeah, it's got to be a current player.
And he actually had some local flair. Wore a local uniform, too.
Luis Oosterhuizen.
I'm drawing a blank. Who is it?
Paul Millsap.
Wow. Is that right?
Kind of a local flair. He was with the Nets for a portion of the season.
Well, it was a flare.
He was in the Ben Simmons trade. The Nets don't get Ben Simmons if they don't give up Paul Millsap.
Paul Millsap was teammates with Al Horford, so that makes sense.
He was on the Atlanta Hawks.
Teams that won 60 games and got swept in the finals. Quick question for you guys before we move on.
Yeah.
What would another championship... Part of why... The player, you know, the players run the sport. The players drive the narratives. Part of why that's true is because we love discussing legacies. We do it all the time with LeBron and KD. So for Steph Curry, what would another championship do for him all time in terms of his ranking? Because that would be four titles, two regular season MVPs, one of them unanimous. You'd assume he's going to win the finals MVP if they do win this series against the Celtics. How high do you think he climbs all time with another championship?
Well, be careful with that assumption because he hasn't actually won a finals MVP yet.
But
Iguodala, Durant. So, you know, I agree with you. He's the most
not
likely
good
candidate
in that first,
to do it.
The first championship when they beat the David Blatt Cavaliers.
That's right. It's a significant increase in his legacy. He's already done that by getting back to the finals because now they have gone to the finals six times in the last 8 years. And I think the only other two NBA teams to do that were Jordan's Bulls and obviously the Auerbach Russell Celtics that won 11 championships in 13 years. Like even the Showtime Lakers, I don't think they ever went to six finals.
No.
Now LeBron did.
Houston in there.
LeBron did, but he obviously didn't do it with the same team. But he himself went to eight consecutive finals, as we know. So, no, this would be huge for Curry. And I've been saying this for a couple of weeks now. I mean, they were a dynasty, mini dynasty, whatever label you want to put on it. Five straight trips to the finals, three championships, a shot to the groin, and a ruptured Achilles away from having a chance to win five consecutive titles. And then, you know, Durant leaves. Curry gets hurt. Thompson is out for 2 years. They bottom out. They have the worst record in the NBA. And 2 years later, the fact that they are back in the NBA Finals in favor to win the championship, if they win the championship, it really would be one of the greatest accomplishments, I think, in the league's history.
And they've done kind of like a back and forth, I think, in the court of public opinion. Because when that first year when they won the title, I think that they were like everybody's darlings. Right, they were this team that kind of, when I say came out of nowhere, but like challenged for a title. Mark Jackson got them to the playoffs, but they were never like somebody that I took.
Yeah, they were exactly. Never a contender.
Everybody loved them. Splash Brothers, you know, Curry was this revelation all of a sudden, you know, and they were this fresh new thing in the Western Conference, and wow. And then KD joins them, and they become the evil empire. The super team, the team that everybody likes to hate because they took the easy way out and bought championships by bringing KD in there. It's not often then you see a team reload once the so-called hired gun leaves like a Kevin Durant. So I think if you look at the whole entirety of this group in this run, if they win the championship, I think it would be outstanding. And all of a sudden they're likable again. But I'll turn the question around, Ty. Instead of Steph Curry... You know who I think it vaults into another stratosphere,
Steve
maybe
Kerr.
A little bit more? No, Klay Thompson.
Mm.
Klay Thompson's a guy that was not on the All-NBA 75 team. Klay Thompson's a guy who's come back from not one but two serious injuries. You saw how emotional he was when they won the conference the other night. If he plays like at a high level in this series, like God, and dare I say, if he wins the finals MVP, this to me, I think his stock has a chance to go higher than anybody's on that Warriors team in this series.
And that would be one of the greatest comebacks in sports history.
I mean,
the guy missed two full seasons because of two separate devastating injuries.
You know, Bill Walton came back and won a championship with the Boston Celtics, but he was a role player. He wasn't MVP Bill Walton like he was before all the injuries took hold of his career. This would be unbelievable.
Yeah, it would be unbelievable. Game one of the NBA Finals set for Thursday on ABC. Let's talk some Mets, shall we? Buster Olney was on KJM earlier. He discussed the impact the Mets would expect Jacob DeGrom to have once he returns.
There is a lot of growing optimism within the organization that he's going to come back and have an impact. So they feel like he's hitting all the marks as he goes through his throwing program, increasing velocity, increasing distance. I talked to folks who spent time with DeGrom over the weekend, and they talked about how he seemed really excited to come back and be part of what the Mets have, which to this point has been a terrific season. And they're going to need DeGrom. They're going to need Max Scherzer if they're going to meet Steve Cohen's goal of winning the World Series. So there are reinforcements on the way for this beleaguered Mets rotation, and they're just continue to play well, even in the absence of those guys.
Speaking of reinforcements,
can we do an exercise? I know this is like just spur of the moment, but I want to do a little experiment here, okay? For everybody who's maybe just turning on the radio now. Can you go back and play the clip that you played at the beginning of ENN from our friend Matt, who was calling?
Let's do it.
Hello?
Hey, Matt.
Yes, I want to say about the Rangers. Whatever happens, it's a very good season.
Okay, stop it. That's Matt. You heard Matt. You heard the quality of Matt's phone right there. Now play the Buster Olney clip. Play it for like 10 seconds.
There is a lot of growing optimism within the organization that he's going to come back and have an impact. So they feel like he's hitting all the marks as he goes through his throwing program.
Maybe they were hanging out together.
Is Buster
now
Israel?
But here's the question. For those that are just new to the show and just listening, if I would have said to you one of those two was actually calling thousands of miles away, tens of hundreds of thousands of miles away in the Middle East, and one was actually probably calling from, I don't know, probably even New York City, which of the two would you think that was? Where was Buster calling from? Like, it sounded like he was 18 miles away from where his phone actually was.
I love that, Pat. Buster also in Israel.
Hi, it's Buster from Israel. First time, long time.
Buster from the Gaza Strip, you're next.
Tyler McGill, who's been on the IL since May 12th due to biceps tendonitis, is expected to begin throwing live batting practice in the next couple of days. According to Mike Puma of the New York Post, he will be evaluated for a minor league rehab start. He expects to have about one or two of those before rejoining the rotation. I said this to you guys earlier on the pre-show call. The Mets, I don't think this division lead is ever going to disappear. And I get premature because it's Memorial Day, but I can't take you seriously as a division contender if you're under 500. And that's what every other team's not named the Mets are in that NL East. And I get it, they have a history of long leads, but this just feels different. And I know we throw around culture too much, but with Buck Showalter and the talent that they have on the roster and an owner who's willing to outspend any flaw that he might deem to be a detriment going forward, I just don't see it happening. I'm not watching a Mets team that's going to blow this lead. Now, are they going to win a championship? All of that depends on what happens with DeGrom and Scherzer, and if they're able to not just return, but stay healthy through October. But I just think that this division race is over. I know it might sound crazy, but that's my take.
I think the difference is not even so much with the rest of the National League East. It's with the Mets themselves. Now, last year, and I got a lot of crap for this, like Met fans were killing me, I never bought into the Mets until July. Like, yeah. I thought they were frauds. I saw right through this team, and I knew that they did not have what it took to get through the long season in first place, and ultimately they didn't. That opened the door for the Braves to go out there and make great moves at the trade deadline, bringing all those outfielders, and they went onward and upward. This year, though, if the Mets don't give those other teams a second lifeline, then it doesn't really matter. And I'm kind of with you. Yeah, I do believe that this team is different from what we saw in 2021. So, yeah, plainly speaking, I think this is a little bit of a different element for this ball club this year.
It's a much different team. The only reason or reasons I leave the door open are, what was the stat you gave earlier, Dan? The Braves, were they 51 and 53?
51-53.
Yeah. Yep. So, and they obviously won the division and they won the World Series. So the way that they closed that season, by the way, without their best player after he was lost for the season. So that's the only reason I leave the door open. Plus, the other reason is, you know, is there going to be a point where there are too many injuries for the Mets to withstand? Right now, they've done a great job, but, you know, it seems like every day or every other day, another name is being added to that list. And you need to get Scherzer and DeGrom back at some point.
But last year, it wasn't just about what the Braves were able to do toward the latter half of the season. It took the Mets collapsing.
No, the Mets component is completely different this year, Ty. Yeah. I agree with that. The Mets do have a different feel, but you could have a different feel, which they do, and you're still trying to hold off a championship team, and if you're doing it at less than 100%, that could get tricky.
And let's be real, it was, and normally we don't say this because a starting pitcher is just once every 5 days. You know, he's not an everyday player. Really, you could trace the Mets' collapse last year and their downfall to when Jacob DeGrom got hurt.
Yes.
Beginning of July. His last start was, I think, like the first week of July. And
July 7th, I think, yeah.
To the rest of the season, yet they were a different team.
Yeah. By the way, so Brandon Nimmo was out. You mentioned it earlier. He is not part of the Mets lineup tonight as they begin this series. So no Brandon Nimmo again tonight.
Interesting. Well, it's going to have to be the Nick Plummer show again.
Nick Plummer. Let's finish off, ENN, with a story courtesy of Brian Windhorst. You'll love this, Pat O'Keefe. From what I've been told, says Brian, the Pelicans at this point are not willing to offer a full 5-year guaranteed deal to one Zion Williamson. And a lot of it is flowing down from ownership. Gail Benson, the owner, is also the owner of the Saints. And I've been told they're going to take a football-style, Saints-style mentality with this negotiation. They will offer him a huge contract, but will not guarantee all of it. So now you wonder if he is going to have a future there in New Orleans. And then, you know, the Knicks fans can get excited because every time a player is unhappy in their current situation, you know, you can go to the trade machines and involve the Knicks in that conversation.
You know, it puts the onus on Zion. Last year was such a weird year. With all of the information or misinformation, it really did seem like he was at odds with the organization. But then in the playoff run, he's on the bench. It looked like he was kind of, you know, wistfully hoping that he could be a part of that because that was such a great first round series they had against the Phoenix Suns. I mean, look, unequivocally, the one kind of full year he had, he was a bona fide 27-point-a-game NBA All-Star. But he's been in the league for 3 seasons and he has played, I don't even know if he's played 100 games over his first 3 seasons in the league. So this is interesting, them putting it on him. It's still going to be a lot of money. Does he turn that down and roll the dice with his injury history? I think everybody would agree, Dan, he doesn't want to be there ultimately. But I think everybody would also agree that his number one priority is to bank as much money as possible.
Yeah, but, you know, I think, and look, if anybody's buying stock in Zion Williamson signing an extension with the Pelicans, I mean, I got a bridge to sell you. Let's be real. But I just take a step back in big picture how this is bad for the NBA, right? Because this is going to be the second great, well, we presume great, number one overall pick, supposedly transformative talent that the New Orleans Pelicans are going to be able to land, and they're going to have to trade away because he doesn't want to play there anymore. It's like, so how do these small market teams in the NBA expect to thrive? You know, look at San Antonio. For as great as San Antonio was for 2 decades plus, they got David Robinson, then into Tim Duncan. You know, what if those guys were not the right personalities for San Antonio and decided, I don't want to play in San Antonio. I don't want to be with the Riverwalk and the Churros, and I want to go play someplace else. Then you would have never had a Spurs dynasty. Like, I don't think that this does the NBA and what they hope to accomplish with competitive balance. It doesn't do them wonders when the Pelicans can't hold on to franchise players 4 or 5 years into the league.
Conversely, though, who won the title last year?
Yeah, there you go.
The Bucks. That's a small market team.
Well, but it's one guy who was different. Like I said, you need a superstar who has to have a different mentality. Giannis is a rare breed. Yeah. He's not one of those dudes chasing the big city, the promotions of this, to that. He's loyal to a fault.
Or Giannis saw that they weren't that far. I think if you have a competent organization that is able to build a team around its star player, then yeah, you can keep them happy.
This is more of a detriment, by the way, to New Orleans than to the NBA, because this is twice it's happened to New Orleans in recent years. And injuries had a really big part of derailing this. By the way, if he is healthy, they're not that far away. Did you watch them in that playoff series? They've got draft picks. They've got
now two stars if he's healthy with him and Brandon Ingram and CJ and McCollum.
Yeah.
They've got role players. They, and I understand Phoenix wasn't the team we all thought they were in the regular season. That played out in the second round. But they gave the Suns a very, very hard-fought six-game series. The arrow, if Zion is there, is pointing up for New Orleans if they have him.
It's just not a good look, though. You know what I mean? It's just not a good look, though, that this organization still repeatedly has to keep going through this. And if you're Zion, you know what? How about some accountability?
Yeah.
Right? How about some accountability?
I love the report that came out the other day. He's been cleared for basketball activity. Like,
okay. That helps.
Can I interrupt for 1 second
and
update something we were talking about a little bit earlier?
Let's do it.
I'll set the scene for you guys, and you can finish the story. So the Giants and the Phillies tied at 2, top of the 9th inning, which means the Phillies' bullpen is factoring into the outcome of this game. What do you think just happened moments ago with the Giants batting in the top of the 9th?
See ya!
They took
go-ahead home run, 3-2 San Francisco.
That's not great for Girardi's job.
Nope.
It's not what you want.
Longoria?
It's not what you want.
I didn't see who hit. It was a right-handed hitter.
I think it was Evan Longoria.
If that's Longoria, that's his fifth home run in the last 5 games.
It was
Longoria. Talk about getting hot at the right time.
Off of Corey Knebel.
That's not good.
Knebel blew it last night. Oh, boy.
That's not great. But that'll do it for tonight's ENN. Brought to you by Slomans. Call 1-800-ALARMY to receive a free doorbell camera with the installation of your Sloman Shield. Keep your family safe. Call 1-800-ALARM-ME.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York. The ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.